at linuxlugcast.com. We also have a email you can send us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and we will respond to that as soon as we get it. We're available. We have a Lemmy page. We have Matrix. We have a video version of this on YouTube and PeerTube. Yeah. Right now, our RSS feed is not working until we get it, because archive.org is not working. So if you're hearing this, more than likely you're on YouTube.
Hello.
I'm your host this evening, Honky Magoo. With us tonight is Eric.
Good evening.
Joe.
Hello.
Lovecraft.
Hello, everybody.
Lugbot. Oh, why did I do that?
What did fish smell like before women went swimming?
I refuse.
Right.
Minix. Please move on.
Ha 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 he 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 ha 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 ha.
Hi, thought it was funny. I'm here.
Morenzy.
Hello, everyone.
Netminer.
I think he's still on mute.
Yeah, well.
Oh, there he is.
I'm here. Remember, don't have Morton C. start singing "I Left My Heart in Thailand."
And Scotty.
Howdy.
All right. Yeah, so there are issues with archive.org.
Okay. Now, there was an official statement made on the 16th, so 2 days ago. Dear patron, on Tuesday, October 8th, the Internet Archive began experiencing a multi-approach cyber attack across several fronts, which interrupted access to our digital library. Our main priority is keeping our archive data safe, though at the expense of service availability. As a result, we took archive.org and openlibrary.org offline over the past few days to examine and strengthen our services. Wayback Machine is now back online in a read-only view, and our blog and Mastodon have returned. We are increasing security measures and conducting additional checks on our infrastructure to ensure our archives remain secure. An attack on our resources is not just an attack on the Internet Archive, but a blow to millions of digital learners worldwide who depend on our services. We are committed to strengthening our defenses and constantly improving our security. We apologize for the impact this caused on you, our valued users. Support of our community is deeply appreciated, and your generosity and assistance can help us during this time. Please consider donating to support continued access to knowledge for all who seek it. We understand if you cannot contribute, but any assistance is greatly appreciated. Thanks, the Internet Archive. So, yeah.
So, the news story I read said it was something about pro-Palestinian hackers. I don't know how accurate that is. That's what I read.
Why
I don't know.
Pro-Palestinians have anything to do with the archive.org?
I just searched for Internet Archive under, you know, there's a news tab under DuckDuckGo.
Yeah,
the news, and it says
that might have been one of those AI stories.
Let me see if I can. It's from. Oh yeah, I don't know what this site is. So okay, never mind. I'm not going to trust that then.
Let me see what Washington Post. They had a good story.
I'm looking at the article from the Washington Post right now. Looking to see if they're saying someone's.
They have a pretty good ride.
Taking responsibility. Yeah.
You take the Verge.
Hackers.
Last week, the DDoS attack resumed, but things escalated quickly.
I can't believe that the DDoS has not been something we've like figured out a way to solve at this point.
It said they leaked the information
to
millions of users. And defaced the site with a message taunting the nonprofit's website for running on a shoestring budget.
Well, what the hell is that supposed to mean?
Right. You know, they were saying that their defenses were pretty weak.
Hacking group on X claimed responsibility for the DDoS attack.
Maybe the political part is that's the... Again, I'm not going to say it until I read it somewhere correctly.
Government actors.
Yeah.
I think it was probably paid for by... the people who don't want the archive around because they want to DRM everything.
That was my first thought too. Like, exactly. There could be so many different, you know, intellectual property holders or like somebody like that, but very peripheral, you know.
That's my best guess, because otherwise, what else are they getting from there?
I just see it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, because it's like all the Internet Archive really does is help people in almost every way. I mean, yes, there are certainly
Do they store PayPal information or credit card information or something?
They said it was patron specifically information.
Patreon?
Patron. So the exposure of patron email addresses and encrypted passwords.
Anybody actually use like their own,
like a login for the Internet Archive?
Oh,
is that what you mean?
Does anybody use their own information on that?
I mean, the Lugcast has its own information.
Exactly.
I mean, if it comes back up, I'll probably go over and change it, because it's been the same one since we initially started. But
so something that's happened to my family recently is my wife's business was impersonated, I guess. Like, they opened a bunch of accounts in her business name, and it's not her personal credit, because that's all frozen, and I checked it, and like, there's no inquiries or anything like that. So it's just her personal. And I mean, the information to do that is readily available, you know, so they do have her personal information in terms of her like name, address, and social and all that stuff, just because, you know, that stuff's just out there for anyone to find at this point, you know, the highest bidder. And so she was kind of freaked out about it. I mean, fortunately, the banks, you know, she was able to contact them and just say, look, it's not me. And it's amazing how, I guess, nonchalant they are about it at this point. Like, it's just a fact of doing business that they just have to deal with this kind of fraud. It's a little weird that they would make it so easy for you to open an account. But I guess that's, you know, if they're onboarding a customer, they kind of have to make it as easy as possible, you know, as low friction as possible. And then I guess the way to deal with it is then if someone, I mean, how she found out was she got a letter with like a debit card. It's just like,
this is okay. Part of the Internet Archive deal or what?
No, I'm sorry. I'm just saying, this is like, for you were saying people's names and like changing passwords. And it just made me think of the fact that like all of our information, we try so hard, you know, to use complex passwords and two-factor authentication and like all these different methods to try to keep things safe. And like, even if you don't share anything online, it just feels like it's an impossible battle.
The information that is out there is enough for things to happen. I mean,
yeah, exactly. That was my point. It was just, but the thing I don't understand is that I just feel like Internet Archive is kind of like an altruistic thing. I mean, they kind of, they're doing
like they're making a crap ton of money there.
Well, and if the excuse is, oh, haha, you have weak security because you have a shoestring budget, like what?
But looking at their blog post from today, that was posted today, it says, as a library community, we are seeing other cyber attacks. For instance, the British Library, Seattle Public Library, Toronto Public Library, and now the Calgary Public Library. They say, we hope these attacks are not indicative of a trend. So who goes out of their way to attack a freaking library?
Those digital media rights holders, I'm telling you.
Monsters.
So we talked about this on Matrix. I think it was me, Morton C, Honky, Joe. If we can get back on the Internet Archive, pull down stuff, what is our plan B? Morton C mentioned a VPS from SSD nodes.
For actually hosting.
Yeah, hosting
the RSS. Yeah, it's limited to the size. You can't add storage to it. Whatever you buy,
right,
that storage that comes with it would be limited.
Now, Joe had a similar idea as far as hosting the stream, the RSS, on Red Circle.
Well,
which
I'm going to attribute that to Bill, because that's what he set up for our backup RSS for Mintcast.
And you said the core plan is free, right?
Yeah, the core plan is free, but you're not allowed to have files larger than 200 meg.
Yeah, that's okay. How big are the streams, Honky? The AUG and MP3 are pretty small, aren't they?
I think so. I can tell you exactly here in a minute.
The AUG might be a little big, honestly, depending on how you encode it. The MP3 shouldn't be.
Yeah, I think they're both well under 200 megabytes piece.
That's right. Just split it up into two episodes.
Now, two.
We're not doing that.
No. That's more work for Honky, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is. I mean, at least that would get something like that, and we don't have to guess how much size we need for a VPS.
Let's see. The AUG is under 50.
Yeah.
That's so we're asking about projects.
So if we do the HP minis locally for, however many of us think our home network can handle it, we could do a backup, and that we could put, a 4 terabyte drive in it, and that should contain the files for a long time.
Yeah, I was saying that the local option is good for the actual archive of past episodes, not necessarily for streaming. But it can be if something happens to Red Circle, because we see what happened with Internet Archive. So if something happened to Red Circle, at least we would have a fallback outside of the cloud,
So yeah, that because of that, I mean, I kind of want to go with a more local idea. I mean, I'm all for, All I need is basically all we need really is an SBC with some sort of storage attached to it. And then if we have multiple people doing that, multiple backups from several areas, then all we got to do is, if something happens, we can just readjust, set up DNS on it. And then all we have to do is, if you know that the power is down in your area, just flip open your phone, make sure you just switch over the DNS, the IP for the DNS to somebody else's, and then it'll be back up. At the very least, it's going to be back up a lot faster than archive.org has been back up. I mean, at this point? I mean, if let's say your power goes down, what's the longest your power has been down for?
Don't ask Texans. Fair enough. The answer to that.
Fair enough. But
you can ask me because I'm on the same grid as a firehouse, so 30 minutes.
But there's a way to do this without anybody having to manually switch anything, I'm pretty sure, as far as load balancing goes.
So we use a single URL at work in previous places I've worked that will either point to whichever one of the four servers is hot, live, and the other backups just stay in sync, and or where it's load balanced and request comes in, it will route it to a different spot.
We use something like Nextcloud or rsync to automatically back up everything to everybody's, and then we use the DNS to point to whichever one is live.
Mm-hmm. And it should be able to detect that automatically.
I'm curious about the hashes for the data, because one of the things I'm thinking about is if any of the data was tampered with by the attackers there, would they be able to confirm that the data is still safe via the hashes? And if that data is safe, would the same thing be true on our end?
Archive.org is not going to check every single file that they have. They're just not. I mean, no way.
Well, but you get the point that I'm making, Riley. So if an attacker got in, just manipulated just a few files, and now as they get shared, now you got malware floating around.
Yeah, that is a distinct possibility. Seems unlikely since they announced themselves. But seriously, we would have to check our own files, and I doubt Honky's going to do that. And I know I'm not going to do that. So. Unless people are willing to do it themselves, it's just a chance you're going to have to take.
What if I download all of it and I can just kind of run something against that, run some sort of a check on it when I have it locally, then it might be all right.
Yeah, you, how much do you have locally?
Me? Not much, yeah. Really. Because a lot of my stuff, like I said, this laptop over here, I was using for all of my stuff for podcasting, for the stream for the New Year's show. And for whatever reason, Bunsen Labs just shit the bed on me. So I wiped it out, and I don't have anything really there. Here I have, 240... Let's see, 247. I got 247. I got another folder where I have about like 249.
I've got the last 50 streams, but they're raw. They haven't been edited, so.
All right, I got 49, 51, 2, 3. There's 250. 249, 250, 251, 252, 253. Yeah,
not much.
No.
So I like the idea of the cloud host for the RSS stream, and we don't have to put every episode up there, but you know, a bunch if we can, so that people are streaming from that when they pull down to their podcatcher. And then I like the idea of local archive for just to keep copies of the podcast itself. And also, if something happens to Red Circle or they cancel our membership or whatever, we still have the locals to stream from, just in case, you know. But the locals will at least keep all the backup, if we can retrieve them, backup episodes. And because I don't know, the thing I worry about is everybody, all the listeners, pulling straight from our local servers is, I just don't think it would be as reliable as something like Red Circle.
It's a professional service. Right. I mean, yeah. Plus, sometimes if your ISP realizes that you're doing something like that, they will shut you down.
Yeah, a lot of them have clauses in their contracts that you're not supposed to run a server, which they haven't caught me yet, but...
Yeah, but you're running a personal server. You're not running something that, you know, well, I guess, you know, like five worldwide other people across service. The planet are accessing to download a podcast.
Yeah, I think if they see traffic coming how many from people? Like everywhere.
Five, six. I don't know how many listeners we have.
Lemmy is probably the biggest service I'm running as far as, and that's got a couple thousand users on it. But I don't think it uses a lot of data because it's federated.
I'd say you could check archive.org to see how many downloads each episode has. I mean, it's not very accurate, but can't. How many listeners do we have?
We looked last time. It depends on the episode. There's a couple hundred.
Two.
But we've had over 1,000 before.
What?
Mm-hmm. Not downloads. We've had a couple of thousand on our YouTube. A couple of the shorts we've cut the video down to.
Yeah.
If we talk about the Steam Deck, we talk about
anything gaming related.
Yeah. Where they were complaining about all our ums.
Yeah, no, that was mine with the
Squeaky
the,
chair.
Yeah, squeaky chair. Yeah. I wish I could do something about that. The NPM.
All right. What do you think about
Xbox this? Manager?
Yeah, remember we did the quick little rundown of Xbox Manager.
What did they say? This is the most
confusing and about
half wit or something. I can't remember what all he said, but it was very...
people talking smack about Joe's beard.
Well, no, they said that was fabulous.
No. The word that they used was ridiculous.
Oh, ridiculous!
And I replaced that with fabulous.
So. Anyway, what do y'all think about that plan? A service for the main RSS, and then we could do local shared backups for to keep the streams, and just in case something happens to the cloud service.
Sure.
Well, that's a plan.
For
a
backup, that sounds pretty easy to do if you're just backing up, but when you want to replace the service that is down, that's to, you know...
Well, that's what Red Circle would be for. And... They actually, it looks like they...
Red Circle, and then a second backup of if any of our devices that we're backing up can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Point to it with an RSS.
Right, right. That's it.
I think those HP Elite Desk G2 Minis, I think one of those would, I mean, even 8 gigs of RAM and a 4 terabyte drive in it, I think that would store everything and be good at feeding.
Yeah, I mean, because basically you're just talking about a file server you can stream from. It doesn't really need to do anything else.
I could probably do it with a Raspberry Pi
B. I think you could.
With the regular one, and then just any sort of, I don't think I need to, but I don't need 8 gigs of RAM. I just need, all you're doing is just sharing singular files.
Well, okay.
No pies. You might, anything but a pie.
Anything but a pie?
You might be a little wrong there on the day that it comes out when people's automation all tries to download it at once.
That could be part of the load balancer's job, too.
The USB port. Well,
the USB bus.
Yeah, the USB bus that the Pi 1 through 4 uses.
It shares it with the network.
I think you're overestimating the amount of people who actually listen to us.
I'm just saying that even if there's 100 of them and they're all using the RSS feed, and as soon as it hits the feed, they're all downloading at the same time, and a Pi is not going to cover it. Even if it's 10 people, it's not really going to cover it.
Well, that's why we have the red circle. The Pi is just the backup.
But he's saying if red circle, something happens to red circle, and then we get a bunch of listeners trying to pull down at the same time. But I think that's what the load balancer is for. It should be able to spread that out across servers.
Yeah, if you have multiple servers up doing the exact same thing that in multiple spots, then that could be able to load balance, yeah.
Ordency's looking at it right now. Betcha.
I'm looking at combining torrent technology with RSS feed. RSS to torrent.
Like, that would be cool if people are set up for it.
No, I'm trying to see if it's something you can do on the back end so the RSS feed feeds the RSS from...
Yeah.
It feeds it from the torrent, yeah. So the RSS feed uses that technology to pull from multiple sources? I don't know.
That would be cool. Remember, too, we're using Blueberry Press, which is a plugin for WordPress that is generating the RSS feed itself. The only thing I feed it is a link to the actual file.
I mean, a load balancer is just a web server. I mean, you could use Nginx or whatever you wanted for the actual load balancer.
I've never done any load balancing. I've just worked places where we've utilized it.
Right.
Somebody else has managed it.
Okay, here we go.
Can you self-host load balancing?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Here's different kinds of load balancing that you could pull off at Nginx. Round robin is the simplest, most common type, where incoming requests are distributed to servers in a cyclical order. Each server is given an equal chance to process a request, regardless of its current load or performance. A weighted round robin is a variant of round robin where each server is assigned a weight based on its processing capacity, and requests are distributed accordingly. Servers with higher weights are given a higher proportion of incoming traffic. Least connections. In this type of load balancing, incoming requests are sent to the server with the fewest active connections in order to avoid overloading any one server. IP hash load balancing. This method uses the IP address of the client to determine which server to send the request to. Layer 4 load balancing. This type of load balancing operates at the transport layer of the network stack and uses information such as source IP, destination, etc. Layer 7. This uses information such as HTTP headers, implement. Okay, so those are so what we would probably want is something like weighted round robin. So whoever has the beefiest server or least connections, so that one server isn't overloaded and whoever has the least connections gets the most requests until they get too many requests and then the next one. So, and that's all done automatically within Nginx, you know, depending on which snippet of code you put into your profile. What is it called? What's the Nginx file called? Your conf. CONF. And I don't think that's too the way they have it here. It doesn't look. And you could just launch it from a Docker container. I'm going to put it in the show notes right now. And load balancing, I mean, doesn't really do anything as far as like processing or, I mean, it doesn't do a lot. Like, you don't need a lot of bandwidth or processing power for load balancing. Load balancing is just directions for servers.
Right. It's not actually an extraordinary amount of requests to bog it down.
Yeah, it's not actually streaming any content like the servers would be. It's just issuing directives. I'll put the link in the show notes. I don't think that would be too difficult to set up. We could actually run the load balancer on the Lubcast Lab if we wanted to.
How much memory does Lubcast Lab have?
I don't know, 48, I think.
48 terabytes?
Gigs of memory? Gigs of memory?
Terabytes.
Or you mean storage?
Storage. TF.
It has one SSD of 400 gigs.
100 gigs at 200 megabyte file size? Dan, how much transfer are we allowed?
You're making him look again.
No, I was signed into the server, so I just did a LSBLK, if you guys know what that is. See the disk. So now I'm signing in and looking on the dashboard.
You ran a DFH?
No, he used the LS block.
Yep. I did both, actually. And I did HTOP to look at the CPU, too. So this is the... let me double check. This is the right one. Nope. To look at
CMG. When we finally hit it big, we wouldn't want to run up your bill.
We hit it big.
This one is 24 gigs of RAM and 400 gigabytes of storage. My other one is 48 gigabytes of RAM and 720 gigabytes of
NVMe. Yeah, but how much transfer are you allowed before they start getting twitching?
Yeah.
48 gig is plenty for the shows.
What are you doing,
looking,
Joe?
Looking.
Well, I just swapped the CPU on this M700 Tiny from Moss because something was wrong with his other motherboard, but I don't know if the CPU is good or not. And I was able to get an i3 version of the M700 Tiny for $30, but RAM and anything. But his had an i7 in it, so what would you rather have?
i3, of course.
Of course.
I mean, limited to 12 terabytes of outbound traffic a month.
Oh, that's not enough.
My larger one is 24. If we go with the largest one, if we do another one, we get 64 gigs of RAM, 1.2 terabytes of NMVE, and 32 terabytes a month of outbound.
Yeah, we're not. That's plenty. Not nearly enough. We're plenty. Talking petabytes. Exabytes. We right need there. All these listeners.
All of tens of them.
Yeah.
All six.
Well, that's cool. That's cool to know that you've got plenty of transfer on those VPSs.
All right. So, have you looked at Joe? Have you looked into the Red Circle at all?
I have not. Like I said, Bill was the one that found that. So.
I mean, it talks a lot about, well, it looks like you can use it for storage, but they also have, like, so much other stuff. Like, they talk up ads so much on this site.
It says, I mean, it's aimed at podcasters, which is interesting. Right.
Well, we just basically need file storage. That's it. I don't need any of the rest of the stuff.
So are you worried that they may inject ads into the show?
Oh, I'm just worried about what I can just use it as
stuff if you wanted to like make money and crap. Okay. Would inject ads into it.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is we don't want Red Circle to inject their ads to the show.
Inject their what?
We don't need Red Circle to create an RSS feed. We don't need to do podcast matrix metrics with it. We don't need it to do anything besides be file storage.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I don't see a free option. I see $15 a month plan.
Underneath
the
that
core. It's table, all the way down called core.
Underneath that table, there's another little button, try core for free.
Yeah.
So number of podcasts, is that number of podcasts or number of podcast episodes?
I think it's number of podcasts.
Yeah, one podcast. Number of episodes, it says unlimited. Number of downloads, unlimited. RSS feed and iTunes support has free importing and redirecting, what we need. It even has podcast stats.
Yeah, the only thing that we need is just data storage.
Yeah.
That's it.
And this looks like a good one. It's free.
Are you saying Red Circle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've used Red Circle. The admin interface is pretty good. You can do all sorts of cool stuff in there.
Can you do, like, nothing?
Yeah, you can do very minimal. I mean, there's some basic meta fields that kind of have to be filled out just so that they can serve it properly. But other than that, I mean, I don't remember. A lot of it was very, very much optional. But there were some fields that were required.
Do they inject ads?
No, they don't. They don't do anything like that. They're really low key. I never understood how they give it away like that. I guess they just have enough business. They have enough people that probably grow, and want the features that are they're paywalled.
Yeah,
because that's so sort of the business it is.
Like the paywall stuff is generate videos, distribute to YouTube, cross promotion, marketplace, analytics, prefixes. Ad category customization, advanced support. So that's what they have.
I think maybe the unlimited tests then also would be something like Twit or something.
Yeah.
Where we have multiple podcasts mm-hmm. running in the network or Jupyter Labs or something like that.
Yeah. And it would be worth it to you if you were making money to pay them, because I think those extra features actually matter to you in that case. But I mean, the podcast.
Yeah, ad revenue stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast that I was on, we ended up doing ad reads like later on, but it had nothing to do with Red Circle or the platform. It was just within the content of,
right.
The recording itself. So no, I mean, this was probably 3-4 years ago, so I don't know if it's changed. But as far as I know, that free tier is still pretty clean. Like, they don't really mess with anything. I mean, it creates a web page on their site with an archive, so it sort of automatically gives you all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, can't remember if you can turn it on or off, or have to look into it a little more. But in terms of just like uploading the files, I remember when I did it, there were just certain fields that you had to fill in. Which made sense because, I mean, you had to
have metadata, a title,
you had to have, yeah, exactly. There had to be certain things that, were there, but there were a lot of optional things like, tags and descriptions and chapters and like all that sort of stuff that, you didn't have to use.
What do you think, Honky?
I'm looking into it now.
Yeah, I'd just say look at it, see what, and you can always just sign up and play around with it and just to see the admin panel and stuff, and if you don't like it, then... but I mean, I just thought it was pretty easy to use personally.
So for the WordPress, Honky?
Yep.
Can you back that up and restore it somewhere else? Do you know if that flow is possible?
What is you want to back up?
The whole site. Do a whole site backup and see if we can deploy it as a container.
Back it up off of Hostinger?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I thought it was on WordPress.com.
No. I'm hosting it on Hostinger. I used their free service for a while, and then I'm on a pay once a year, I think. Something like that. I pay once a year for Hostinger, and I pay once a year for Slugcast.com, the DNS.
The domain name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know if you'd like so I was talking earlier before the show started about doing a backup on the server for projects for us to work on Lugcast Lab, to do the Jitsi on the server, to do Mumble on the server, so we have more than one spot, so anytime it's not working, we can redirect the DNS to another. I don't know if the recordings would go better on that or not, being on the server. I would like the Videorama Matrix to be its own PeerTube channel, because people are always asking me for videos, and I'm always saying, hop on Matrix, and they're going, what?
That's thousands of videos, Morton. You know how long that would... Oh, you know what? I could combine the videos into, like, 5-minute long clips or something. I don't know. But I can't do a video for each clip. It'd take me forever. You talking about Videorama, the Matrix channel?
Yeah. Those are all stored somewhere, aren't they?
On Videorama.
Isn't that your hardware?
Yeah. But that's thousands of videos.
Can't you just point PeerTube to it and like write a no. script that adds?
No, not that I know of. PeerTube doesn't work that way.
I don't know how it works, because I haven't figured out how to load stuff in my PeerTube.
No.
Where did you get those videos from anyway? Some of those are crazy.
Just group chats, mainly, yeah. On Telegram, used to be some old Telegram group chats and Google chats and stuff like that.
Do you have the U.S. soldier that emulated himself screaming Free Palestine?
I didn't put that on there. I try not to put any real disturbing stuff on there. Yeah.
I've seen some real disturbing stuff on there.
Yeah. Monkey disagrees, but no, I don't put any hardcore gore or anything like that on there.
What have I've I seen some people Honky? Electrocuted and shot in the head.
Shot, yeah.
Yeah, but no.
The guy walking up and down the street shooting people, a couple of people being shot, a couple of people's hands blowing up, and like just all you see is fingers hanging down. And
no, that's not on there, is it?
Yes.
Yeah,
dude held a firecracker or whatever, and you see half his fingers. The guys who decided it'd be fun to shoot themselves in the face. Was it a pellet gun or was it a real gun? He put the thing right there.
Yeah, but you couldn't see it.
Giant hole right there. What was the limit there? Where you're...
Yeah, like there's no decapitations or like really gory deaths or anything like. I mean, and no porn. I don't put any porn. I mean, there's some nudity, but there's no
people
porn.
People have different lines.
Yeah, like it's not going to traumatize.
I need to warn people. I need to warn people that are on my Plex. I need to warn people on my Plex. Some of those music videos are X-rated. I have been watching them randomly, and stuff's popping up. Some of the
which one,
especially mostly the rap ones. There's some 50 Cent and Snoop Dogg, and what was the one? There was a American Woman. Who is that? Is that Lenny Kravitz?
Yeah, originally
it was I think put together by somebody else where they did half and half. Him and very adult content.
Now, if I wanted to go full bore on Videorama, I could, but I don't. There's lots of stuff that is too extreme. I don't.
I have a few people who are always asking me where I'm seeing those, and they want in on it.
Have them join the channel. There.
Yeah, they're. They're never gung-ho to figure out Element and Matrix and...
Their loss.
What is it that you're talking about?
Oh, you're not in the channel, Eric?
I'm in Matrix, but I don't know...
Let me send you an invite.
There is a not-safe-for-work channel called Videorama is over 2,000 videos, and they are at different levels of... Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I used to be a fan of LiveLeak back in the day. For a lot of that stuff, and it was definitely things like I would watch it, and then I'd feel like shit for watching it because I was like, "Why did I watch?"
No,
that?
There's nothing like that in there.
It's all of that.
Someone's no, not funny.
Yes, it is.
It's mostly funny, and none of it's like what you would see on Rotten.com or
so. The video Ogrish of the guy walking up the street shooting at random cars as they went by, and the guy who's
and the guy in the window screaming down to him saying, "Shoot me."
No, yeah. I thought it was, I knew you were going to be here or something, or I prayed for you or something like this.
Yeah, but there's nothing gory in that video. It's just crazy.
Not that one.
Messaged you, Eric, an invite.
Yeah, and I have to do like the verification thing, I guess.
If you get a chance, check out the one I saw it the other day about the, I guess it was a group of guys who created a hotline or something crazy.
Hotline?
They created a hotline and they were inviting you to call the hotline.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. If you, what was it? Something about if you want to fight or something or argue or. I can't remember what it was.
That's the cleanest way you can put it.
Yeah.
I don't remember that one.
Remember, it was the 1-800 or the 1-900 number you could call, and there's like gangsters on the other end that would just call you a pussy and all this other stuff. And
that one was pretty funny.
There's a couple thousand videos, and I went back all the way to the beginning and watched them. To current, I was way behind. I hadn't watched any of them.
Is there an easy way to go back to the beginning, or do I just have to keep paging up?
You have to keep paging up.
I had to keep paging up.
Yeah.
Try control home. I didn't try it yet, but you can probably do that.
Let's see. No, it's just paging.
Hold page up. For a week.
For a week. Let's well, there's see. The up arrow. Jump to first unread message, and I do that, and then it just brings me all the way back to the bottom.
I'm looking now if there's any way to.
I don't think I've ever watched anything on Videorama without with the sound on. There's very few I'll actually watch with the sound on.
I've actually never heard of it. I stopped looking for stuff like that probably several years ago because, I don't know. That voyeurism stuff, like, it just got... I think I watched just one too many, like, videos like that that just literally made me sick, and I was like, what am I doing? Why am I watching this,
this
shit?
Is not... Something... Don't listen to them. This is not like that.
Okay.
It totally just, is.
It is not. Great. Most of it's just really funny stuff. I really don't know
who to trust here. I have seen way worse. I have seen way worse. Are not safe for work chat in Signal has... This stuff and way worse than this stuff. We have one person that does post adult material, usually with violence and, you know, like people getting their junk stomped on and.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a video I saw the other day of like cartel members. They had this dude naked and they had a pit bull that was like eating his dick and balls, you know, while he was screaming on the ground. So, like, stuff like that, I'm not going to put on there. It's just too much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
There goes our rating on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, there was one with the pit bull that was attacking the guy with a knife.
Oh, yeah, he had a sword in his mouth or something, and the guy had a skateboard, and he didn't get
the dog was attacking the guy with a sword in his mouth.
Yeah.
I'm watching it now, actually.
There's nothing.
The dog seems super happy too.
Yeah.
Tail's just wagging away.
And that's the scary part. The dog's playing, but if he hits you with that blade, it ain't going to be much play after that.
No.
We're going to Pawtoberfest tomorrow. Speaking of dogs, it's like a Oktoberfest, but everybody brings their dogs and dresses up in like Halloween costumes and stuff like that. And they have a dog parade. You ought to bring your dog, Joe. Your new puppers.
Whose dog are you bringing?
When is this?
It's tomorrow.
I'm busy.
Yeah. Sorry for the late.
I have a podcast.
Wow. Okay.
Friends are coming with their dog.
Don't give me that shit.
What? No, I'm sorry. I was laughing at a farting clown. that was funny. I will give you credit. That was
most of them are funny. But yeah, so that's tomorrow. A couple of my friends are bringing their dog, and we're all going to go up there and drink beers, watch bands. And
oh, I made it. November 7th, 2022.
Oh, really? That far back?
I made it to the top. It actually didn't take that long. I just kept hitting home because it would load, I don't know, 8 scrolls of my mouse. And if I just hit home, it just kept going up. So
yeah.
Speaking of watching videos, do we talk about watching a movie?
Well, not yet.
Okay.
So the other day, one of my fans on my 3D printer started making like a horrendous noise. It was never the quietest fan to begin with, but I guess it just got old and said, nah, I'm done, and just started squealing mid-print.
Was it bearings or bushings?
That would have been brushless, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, no bearings on that one. It probably shouldn't have been running 24/7 the way I had it. But I had the Noctua fan. I had purchased a Noctua fan for when that fan went bad so that I could replace it. Oh my God. You can't even hear my 3D printer anymore.
Really?
That quiet? It's awesome. You can hear the slight like electronic beeps like the old ones used to make, but nowhere near as loud when it like changes direction or something, but it is so much quieter.
Nice.
It's awesome. I'm going to... Those Noctuas are like $15 each, and the other like 4010s, I can get four of them for like $5 or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to justify placing like all the fans, but still.
Well, if it's already quiet, then we need them.
Now, I would vouch for the Noctuas. I did that. I replaced all the fans in my system with Noctuas, and I do not regret it at all.
They're worth the hype.
The quietness of the fans, even though they're high performance fans, is absolutely fantastic, and I've had them in there for years. Normally, with some of the cheaper fans I'm used to buying, because I just rebuild in my case as is needed. So with the cheaper fans, over the years, they'll start to rattle a little bit. You know, you get those awkward noises, and eventually one or die or whatever. The Noctuas have been going strong, silent, and I do not regret it.
Makes sense to me. Now, it does make me think, though, like my DAS box is a little bit loud, so I might replace, they're not 40s in that, they got to be 80 millimeter fans in that. I might replace the 80 millimeter fans that are in that with some Noctuas and just make it super silent.
Yeah, especially if your PC is near you and you do any kind of recording, I mean, must have.
Well, my PC is not so bad. The fans, you can hardly hear those at all. But yeah, I mean, my DAS box is further away, and it is the loudest thing in here right now. I can hear it with my cans on, so I might replace the 80 millimeters in that. I think there's two of them. I'll have to double check. And then I need more hard drives again. I still got to replace that 12 terabyte. Hopefully I can get two when I get them. And I need to replace the fan that is in my Raspberry Pi. I got one of those little Nintendo cases for it that everybody gets because they're awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But the fan in that is, you know, occasionally getting loud. But that's a 35 millimeter fan. So I'll have to probably not get a Noctua for that one and just get a replacement because it's an odd size. 35 millimeter by, I think, 10. And then it's got it's a 5-volt fan, the two pins separated,
mm-hmm.
not a standard like 2-pin connector.
Joe is awesome.
Everybody knows this. I don't I don't know why Lugbot felt the need to say that.
Because everybody needs to know.
Everybody does know. Joe mm-hmm. is awesome.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
I did just do that BU replacement, and it is working.
Oh, you've already got it fired up?
Yeah. Took both of them apart, swapped over to put in the original RAM. I thought RAM might be bad, but no, it's the RAM controller on the other board that went bad. It's all good now. Now I just got to package it back up and send it back to Moss. Got to send me money for parts.
Are we allowed to talk about the movie yet?
Yes, now you can talk about the movie.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
you're welcome.
The Linux Movie Cast. So, we ended up with a movie called movie/documentary, I'm still unsure, called Catfish from 2010. And I'm guessing this is where the term originated from, because at the end of the movie, a guy starts talking about how they used to ship cod from the U.S. to China in these big vats. And when the cod finally got to China on the tanker, it was real flavorless and mushy. So they would put catfish in the tanks with the cod, and that would nip at the fins of the cod and keep them agile, and then somehow this this kept the fish tasting good. I don't know how that works, but so he was using catfish as a metaphor for somebody that is always nipping up your fins, keeping you agile and on your toes and stuff like that. So that's why this movie is called Catfish. I'm guessing this came before the term, because what we realize is a catfish now, like, basically, what would you call a catfish? Like somebody you're talking to online or something that misrepresents themselves?
Somebody's in front of you and, you know, they
have the wrong scammer.
Yeah, they have the wrong... They have a picture from 20 years ago or a picture that's not even them or something like that. And, yeah, they lure you in.
Yeah, misrepresents themselves, I think.
Yeah, misrepresents themselves. So,
yeah.
So that's the... That's the core of this movie, is that, and we're going to spoil, you can't help but spoil it, talking about it, is that this
movie embraces my interactions on the internet for 30 years.
Catfishing people?
Everybody is a liar.
Yes. So, it starts out with three guys, two are filmmakers, one's a photographer. The photographer posts, this is in 2010, so Facebook is huge back then. And he posts all his photographs. He specializes in photographing dancing, dancers, and things like that. And he's been in newspapers and stuff. And he got this follower. Was it the little girl that was his follower at first?
So was the mom? I think it was initially was it Abby? Abby was a little girl. And this woman was claiming that the little girl was making these pictures. So she would make... She would draw and paint. Yeah, she would make these paintings off of people's like photographs and stuff. Now, did she initially start? It's the beginning part where I'm kind of
So she
hooked up.
She sent him a picture or a painting of one of his pictures of the guy holding the woman up in the air. Mm-hmm. So she sent him her painting of that picture and said she really liked the picture. Supposedly Abby, the daughter, which is an 8-year-old girl. Right. So that's how he first came in contact them. And through this contact, he found out that Abby is like this really gifted artist for her age and does all these paintings and drawings. And then he got in contact with her mother, and her mother was this really cool lady. And then the mother's, or Abby's older sister, Megan, I think is her name, and she was 19, and this dude is in his early 20s, so they kind of had a love connection, and all this stuff is just happening through Facebook.
How did he meet up with Megan, or connect with Megan? Did he just started following her on Facebook, and then they somehow started talking on the phone?
So I think Abby was the first connection, and then Angela.
Abby and Abby's mom, because Abby's mom is the one who's Angela, who's sending the pictures to him.
So Angela friended the Neve was his name through Facebook because of Abby, and then Megan friended Neve through Angela because she was her daughter. So they all kind of had all these connections through this family, and Neve started talking to Abby on the phone, you know, because he thought she was a great painter. Then he started talking to Angela, the mother, on the phone because he thought she just had this wonderful family. And then she started talking to Megan because she was close to his age and they kind of had a love connection. And she was this beautiful woman on Facebook and had all these pictures of herself. She was a photographer, a musician and stuff. And she supposedly wrote all these songs for him and all this other stuff. And slowly it starts to break down about half an hour into the movie. Don't they start with the songs, first of all?
Yeah, they start with the songs. Yeah, where she asked him, or he asked her about if she can write a song or record a song for him. And she comes back with a few minutes later with songs, and one of them doesn't play right. Or the file wasn't able to play right, so he just searched for the song online and found the exact same song, but played by somebody else.
And it was on YouTube or something. So then this is kind of the crack in the veneer of the relationship, because he realizes at first they say, well, maybe she just covered it and. And, you know, it sounds similar, but it might not. But then they go some other songs she supposedly wrote, and they find those too online from different artists.
Yep.
So I think now they get the idea that there's, you know, there's some lying going on, but they haven't put together the pieces yet that who Megan really is and Abby and all that. And so it kind of goes on like that, where the lies start to unfold and they realize that they've been had, not quite to the extent that they are going to find out when they travel there, but they know that something's not right. So they decide to make a trip. To where do they live in Michigan?
Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, and so they flew to Chicago for a shoot, and they decided to drive to this little town in Michigan because now they have the address, because it's on the return address from the packages that they've been sent, and supposedly Megan, the older daughter, has a horse farm that she works at or volunteers at or something, so.
I think she owns.
Oh, does she own it?
Yeah, she's supposed to own him.
And she lied about that part as well, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is all lies. But he's just saying that's what she said.
I like it when they go to the horse farm and...
yeah, it's at night.
Yeah, and the letters that that he sent to her at the horse farm were in the mailbox as return to sender.
Yeah, with the postcards and all that stuff. So before they even get to the house, they stop by the horse farm in the middle of the night. They find the letters that he sent. They're all returned to sender. So nobody even came to check the mail. So that horse farm has nothing to do with the family now, they realize. So they also know that Angela has said they have an early Sunday breakfast where the whole family comes, and they decide to crash the breakfast. So they drive into town in the morning, and first they see this building that used to be an old JCPenney that Angela, the mom, had told them her daughter Abby had bought the building with the proceeds from the pictures that she had painted, and it had become her own personal gallery for this little 8-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. And before they even flew to Illinois, they found the building on Google Maps and saw it was empty. Not only was it empty, but it was either for lease or for sale. And they called the realtor, and the realtor said, yeah, nobody's been there for like 3 years. So they knew that the gallery story was fake. So when they're in Illinois, they drive by the building, and it's completely empty. There's no gallery to be had there.
I think it's still Michigan, but yeah.
Yeah, in Michigan. Okay, you're right. Michigan. And, So now they're on the way to Angela's house for. I think they brought flowers and orange juice for breakfast and stuff like that.
He picked some flowers on the side of the road.
Yeah, and this is going to be the big unveiling.
Right. So
she has no idea they're coming, and they end up going there. And Angela answers the door and looks nothing like this painting that her daughter supposedly painted of her. And the reality of the situation is pretty grim, because when they go in, there is a little girl there, Abby, playing with her friend. But Abby doesn't paint. She says her mom paints. And there's also two twin boys who are Angela's stepsons. Is that right? From getting married.
The husband, Vincent, from a previous marriage, yeah.
Yeah, and they're severely disabled. They have to be fed through a tube in their stomach and stuff like that. And Angela is, I guess I should say, much more overweight than the painting that was presented to them. And she just looks kind of like your average housefrau mom, and nothing really special about her.
And this guy is savage over here.
Well, I don't know what to say.
Poor woman.
I mean,
goodness, she's ugly, all right?
Yeah, she lied.
She fell out of the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down.
Yeah, so they do actually go to a horse farm at one point, I think, or some kind of corral or something.
Abby was taking like riding lessons or something. One of those things where they just kind of go around in a circle.
Now, I got to ask you this, because I don't know if we're going to go back. Are we going to go back over any more
sure.
of this?
Yeah, oh, we can. Okay. Sure. No, if you want to, you can say whatever you want. Yeah. Jump right. in.
Cause I think Scotty should just read his synopsis in the show notes.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
At this point, let's let him take it over.
Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
There were a couple of challenging areas in the movie. One, when you find out that the grown man, Nev, has this wonderful, inappropriate relationship with an 8-year-old online.
But is it?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't say anything to her that would be sexual or anything like that.
Okay, let's stop and think about it for just a second. Grown man making phone calls to an 8-year-old.
I get that. I get your point.
You know, and not only that, messaging her and it asking is a little bit for weird. Things online. Now, supposedly she's doing all of the communications through her mother.
Right.
But he still manages to communicate with her directly, or so we believe. So that's the first thing that automatically stood out to me about this movie, that this grown man is happily having a relationship with an 8-year-old online.
Platonic.
Okay. Yeah, okay. That's one way of putting it.
Now, and if I was Abby's dad, I would say, hell no, you're not talking to this grown man.
Yeah.
But I, the way I understood it is he was just...
Well, kind he had of, no idea.
Yeah, he was astonished how what a great painter he was, and he was flattered that she was painting his photographs and him and things like that. So,
well, she told him early on that she was only 8 years old. That was part of the thing. Like, he knew from the beginning.
Yeah.
Not only that, I just want to point out, to me personally, this is a personal preference here, but I thought that Nev had a very punchable face. And he kept putting it... in the camera, like, so close.
He was very much a New Yorker, I will say that.
Yeah, I you know, just looking at his face the entire time, I was just, you know, constantly holding back from hitting the monitor. So, you know, moving on here. Now, when the whole thing started happening and he's falling in love with this supposedly the older Megan. Sister.
Yeah.
I immediately thought something was wrong there, right? Because obviously the title of the movie.
Obviously it was going to be wrong.
Well, yeah, I knew that too. Because of the title of the movie.
How it played out where it's like, okay, we've discovered she's lying to us. What do we do next?
Everybody online lies.
Right, but what do we do when we find out that they lie? We fly to their house.
Because we all have...
Not everyone lies.
So that's your first thing that you do. You decide, let's go to their house and confront them personally with our friends. Like, how wrong could this...
No, you have to also remember that they started, because of this relationship that they started with this girl, is why they started the video in the first place.
Documentary, right.
This documentary in the first place, I'm sorry. So this is, that's probably one of the reasons why they decided to go and confront her or figure out what's going on, because they want, the whole point is to do, continue the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he wants to, because he wants to figure out what's, if this woman actually exists and whether he can actually have a relationship with somebody, or whether he should be smart and just absolutely cut ties and, you know, run for the hills.
I thought the same thing too, but see, at a certain point when Nev first realized he was being lied to, and his terrible friend Henry, who was there giving him bad advice the entire time.
He was the instigator, the pot stirrer for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wants to make a movie, there, man.
Yeah, he wants as giving much drama as possible.
Keep talking to her.
Nev kept telling him, I don't want you directing every single aspect of my life. Just let me do what I want to do. And the guy's like, nope, we got to make the movie.
Yeah.
Your decisions suck. We're going to make the movie. Now, the great part about that I thought was just excellent and warmed my heart is when they finally went there and met Angela, and like the great shadow of disappointment washed over him. You could see that Nev wanted to die. So he got in the car with this complete stranger against the wishes of all his friends. And the entire time, I thought this was going to turn into a murder horror movie at that point.
You know, the most cringeworthy moment was when they're both sitting in that room And Angela's sketching him.
Yeah.
And he says, I want you to be Megan a little bit and talk to me like Megan. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can watch. It's so awkward that she had to pretend to be her daughter that was in love with him or whatever. And they pointed out that she was in love with him. Angela was in love with him.
How about this? How about this? This complete stranger shows up to your house unannounced, and you just let him be alone with your daughter, your 8-year-old daughter.
That was kind of weird.
Yeah. Who is in a bathing suit, a 2-piece bathing suit? Not only that, this guy's got a camera aimed at her, and she's sitting on the stairwell with her legs just spread wide open. I'm like, great, now I'm going to prison. You know, this guy's taking up shots at a... at an 8-year-old
Okay, girl. You're reading a little more into this than I think there is in the movie.
Look, bro, hi.
You're really looking for a...
Not everything is about sex.
Not everything's about...
You have to remind yourself of that every now and again. No, everything is about sex.
He's a stranger
from the internet.
Yeah, but...
I wouldn't let a stranger from the internet into my house.
No, because we're not this lady. Think about the mental state of this lady, what she did throughout the whole movie. Do you think she's going to make great decisions when it comes to other aspects of her life? Anything? Probably not.
Indian no.
Yeah. The head bob.
Did you see Vincent?
Yes. You
understood where the kids came from after he talked.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you see what I wrote in there about him?
Good old
Vincent.
But Vincent was being lied to by Angela, too, the whole time. I mean,
he wouldn't know the difference.
And here's the thing that made it so bad. Now, she apparently was selling these paintings online to clients and making this massive living.
By the way, just for people that aren't, Vincent is the stepfather, so he's who she's married to.
So go on. And Abby's father, too.
And they live together, yeah.
Yeah.
So he believes his wife that she's selling these paintings, and that's a client that she's constantly talking to,
right?
Nev. Now, there's no income for any of these conversations or anything.
Nope.
She's supposedly mailing these photos to this guy, getting paid for them all.
But he's actually commissioning them from her. So he's asking her to paint these and paying her. So that's why she's painting all these. That's what she tells Vincent, her husband.
Here's the kicker now. On top of that, when the stranger shows up to the house and he just takes your wife away, along with 3 other guys.
Yeah, he's not the brightest.
You heard him talk. He's not a very bright man.
No. And he said he thought this was fantastic for her.
Oh,
because
yeah.
She's finally getting recognition for her art, and somebody wants to buy her paintings and stuff. And he said, you can go down to Main Street or whatever and see 1,000 starving artists with Velvet Elvis paintings, but she is the one that's actually getting recognition, having her paintings are being bought and all this stuff.
Sounds like this woman was just catfishing everybody.
She was.
Everybody. Yeah.
But the look on Nev's face whenever they're sitting in that room and he asks her to be Megan, the girl that he fell in love with, and he's got to look at this 40-something-year-old body that is about to bust the chair she's sitting in while she's sketching him, and compare that to the beautiful 19-year-old skinny woman in the pictures on Facebook, and then you could see like his eyes are watering and stuff. You realize how hard he was played by this woman, and how did he not just fly into a rage? I have no idea, but I guess he felt such empathy or sympathy for her, because why? I don't know, you know? Why?
I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because he had given up on life after he first saw her. He just said, you know what? He
just wanted to die.
I've already spent all of my profit from the other shoot flying down here to see Angela, and this is who she turned out to be.
And this went on for like almost a year. I think he said 8 months or 8 or 9 months of communicating on Facebook before they even went out. Yeah, all that time.
Yeah.
And he had this online girlfriend, so he thought.
Now, another thing, a key thing, did you guys notice that Niv had a tramp stamp.
What?
Yep. Yeah.
No, I didn't see it. Are you serious?
Yep. Yeah, that was terrible.
What was it?
Niv is a hero amongst us.
What did you see? What was the tattoo?
Kind of, some kind of line design or something like that. I tried to try not to look too long.
That's crazy. Why would
I put it in the notes?
I've never in my life seen a man with a tramp stamp. That's insane. I mean, if you want to get one, fine. I've never seen it before.
That's how you know he was a hero. This man was prepared for anything.
Yeah. He probably lost a bet or something.
Oh, he lost more than just one bet in his life. With that documentary and everything going on.
Oh, my God.
And not only that, the person that they were doing the co-location with in the beginning, that person, I think, knew that they were being catfished.
Really?
Notice how whenever they were recording, that person kept trying to cover their face the entire time while they were doing the recordings.
Well, I don't know if that knows they knew they were being catfished, but they probably just didn't want to be filmed or part of the movie.
Well, I wouldn't want to be filmed either. I found out that my guy, you know, my roommate or whatever you call him, is over here talking to an 8-year-old girl on the internet,
and or that he had a tramp stamp.
You know, and he's got a tramp stamp. I mean, it's like, oh, oof. Might want to start finding a new place to do work.
So the way it ends is, you know, he gets it all out of her. You know, she tells him that what he, and here's the thing, even when he shows up and busts her for lying, she's still lying to him. She says she has cancer when they get there, and that her daughter is in
an alcoholic
going to rehab,
and all this other stuff. It's, why are you still lying? You're already busted. There's no reason to keep. It's crazy. This lady is crazy, man.
What about the reveal? You remember the reveal?
Which
when the daughter was riding the horses,
Abby? And
when he finally said, "Okay, I'm really, really wanting to see what's her name, Angela." The
Megan,
yeah. Oh. He's like, and she revealed right then. She said she's here, and the look on their faces, you know, oh my goodness, she looked like a serial killer, and he looked like he knew it at that time. He was like, oh God, what did I got myself into? And she's just sitting there looking completely deranged.
Yeah, she was Megan.
Didn't they say that there was a Megan, right? But she was never down at the ranch.
No.
Megan was a real daughter. Yeah, she was a real daughter. But
she was never an alcoholic.
No, well, I don't recall if she was a real alcoholic or not, but I know that she was real. But most of the photos were of Megan's friends.
All of the photos.
Well,
none of them were of Megan.
The one who was Megan was actually a actress slash photographer slash something.
Lived in Washington, yeah.
I thought
the family.
Was Washington? Or was it Vancouver or something?
Oh, Vancouver, right. You're right, Vancouver.
Yeah, the other ones were people in town. The other people who were supposed to be like friends and cousins and stuff were people in town.
Yeah, but they weren't. They weren't friends or cousins. They were just random people.
Right.
Like, she even lied about that when she was already busted. She said, oh, this is my cousin, this is my friend.
Which but went through the list of all the people that she was online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she broke out the setup. Did you see her setup?
Yeah.
That's why this was a tech movie. She's got multiple phones. She's sitting
in front of her Blackberries.
Computer and everything. And I'm like, oh, my God.
But does she ever actually say why she did all this?
You know why. Come on now.
What?
Living in that life,
that's kind of what I took away from it. Because didn't she say that she was? I mean, not that you can trust anything she says, but she said she had these dreams and aspirations, and she feels she's married
to Herman Munster.
Herman Munster, and but not only that, but she's stuck there because she has to take care of these his children who are grown men, but they're so severely disabled that they need constant care. You know, so she never. According to her, she never got that opportunity. She said she was a dancer, which I seriously doubt. But she said that she never got to pursue her dream of dancing and all this other stuff. And it was just so much bullshit. But the real question is, what is your opinion as to the authenticity of this quote-unquote documentary?
Fake.
You think it's completely fake?
Not completely. I think there may be some real elements, like the real people have been catfished, but I believe that them trying to pass this off like it was a real documentary. No.
Are you guys aware that this was turned into a long running TV
series on MTV? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure, because you guys are talking like you didn't know that. Okay.
Plus, there's another movie that came out this year, I think, called Catfish.
So, I'm kind of like, I don't know what to believe, to be honest. I think that...
Did you see the real picture of Nev at the end of the movie versus the Nev that played him?
Well, that was still him. That was him. He just had short hair. It was the same guy.
He didn't look very much like this. It was the same guy?
Yeah, it was the same guy.
The same guy that was in the series the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know,
I gotta look at it again.
The funny part that I read when Joe brought up the Wikipedia thing, so I looked that up and it said when this premiered at Cannes or wherever originally, the maker of who's that guy that made that movie about eating McDonald's for a month and getting sick?
Super Size Me.
That guy. He said,
shit, I can't remember his name. Yeah.
He went up to the
Spurlock.
Yeah.
Morgan Spurlock.
Morgan Spurlock. He went up to them and said, this is the greatest fake documentary I've ever seen. and they were adamant, the filmmakers, that it wasn't fake. But I have my doubts, because there are so many things that happen that just happen to play out in a way to make it more dramatic. So many signs early on that the shit was not real. Like, what I'm talking about is that the old catfish was actually a catfish, and Angela and all that, setting them up. So maybe
it was 2010, right?
2010.
It came out. So that means it would have been filmed before that. And if they had 50 to 100 hours of film, like film in the process, I could see where you'd capture this many great, great moments.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But it just seems contrived, a lot of it, to me. That maybe there's somewhere in the middle, you know, that's partly true and partly manufactured. I don't know. But I don't buy it that it's completely off the cuff and this is just the way things happened. The way, you know, maybe some clever editing, something, but I don't know.
I don't believe it either.
But, you know, I believe it's worth a watch. I mean, even though it's that term has been used to death, and just to see where it originated.
Fargo says it's based on real events, and it's not.
Oh,
yeah. Remember that part when they
And by the way, this isn't a dramatization. This is presented as an actual documentary. Making that clear.
The part at the farm when they arrived that night and they were just looking inside the barn. The first thing I thought was, how was no one shot?
Well, I don't know if anybody lived there. Anybody live there?
Yeah, because think about it. The letters returned to sender. Somebody had to put them back in there.
Yeah, I don't know if there's an actual house there.
They're white.
Oh, okay. Wait. Okay, yeah, there you go.
I don't know if there's an actual house there. I mean, I saw the barn and
it's stuff. Not Ohio or Florida. That's not a stand your ground state.
But I would give it a thumbs up. You know, it's interesting for sure. It was very awkward to watch at some moments, especially during the talking with Angela and stuff. She just seemed like such a psychopath, you know,
like
yeah, like I don't know. Like, there's one thing about, like you said, everybody lies on the internet. But this wasn't just a simple lie. This was an extreme example of creating not only these fake profiles and stuff.
Identities.
Yeah, but like changing her voice to seem like her younger daughter and then telling Nev how much she loved him and wants to be. It's just stuff like that is just insane to me.
If you watched any of the TV series, and again, you can question the authenticity. Some of the people that at least would pretend to do this, I mean, it was pretty, some of the stories were pretty unbelievable. I mean, really? Just like how, and I don't, you know, a lot of the people.
I meet somebody about like that once a year.
Really?
Yeah. Since I got on the internet. Yes. I've met people in person like that before.
I think there are people that just are so far, just so unhappy with their own lives that they have to fantasize or detach themselves from it. And this is like their outlet is to, and honestly, for I think most of this, it's kind of harmless because, like Mortensen's saying, like if you just realize that you're talking to someone and you can't possibly know whether it's true or not, and you know, it's kind of harmless unless they're asking you for money or somehow interfering with your life. And I guess that's why they get away with it, or why they do it, or why they feel it's not like wrong. But it's the whole, I guess, when they take it too far and it's someone, you know, like it's a love thing, and you know, I don't know. I can understand how someone would be a shut in and be, or be like, I don't know. Like there's one where there was like a gay kid who lived in the middle of nowhere in like this really small town, and he, like, who is he going to be gay with? You know what I mean? Like there's absolutely no prospects for him, but he had this fantasy of being a woman, so he was catfishing men, straight men on the internet, mm-hmm. because that's what he was interested in. And then, like, you know, they went and found him because someone had, he had catfished someone, and da 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 da. And you go through the whole backstory and you look at him and you're like, yeah, he did some crazy stuff. But on the other hand, like, he's kind of in an impossible situation. And
so you wouldn't say, you would say it's not malicious, even though he.
Yeah, I don't think he meant to hurt,
meant to harm his feelings. Anybody. Like, yeah.
I think he got caught up. And I think that's what happens to a lot of these people is like, I mean, what's the one where they're taking the money? It's not catfish. It's the term for the, damn, I can't, pig slaughtering.
Oh yeah.
Pig butchering.
So that's
pig butchering.
Yeah. Pig butchering. Yeah. So that's like catfishing, but with the malice. You know what I mean?
It's a romance scam where
you're milking
money from your
exactly. Mark. So that's the whole point of it, is to bleed someone dry versus, you know, catfishing can be, and probably in most cases is just pretty harmless in that sense, where it's not like financial damage or, you know, heavy psychological stuff. I don't know.
Like, do you guys know anybody that's fallen victim to something like this?
Bad? Well, I've fallen victim to a pig butchering scam. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I have a family member that fell for it. Yeah.
Wait, you have fell for it, or you said someone else?
A family member.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, family member. And like, even once they figured out, my family figured it out, they were like taking his devices away because he would not stop.
Really?
Yeah, it was, so he it was just, insane.
He was just convinced that it was real.
He pissed my away his entire life savings.
My wife's mother. It wasn't the pig butchering. It was definitely catfishing. But she's got taken by several. And, you know, I keep telling them they should talk to me before they talk to anybody that calls them on the phone, because Microsoft's never going to call them, ever, ever going to call them. And, yeah, it was a...
Even if you pay for support and it's their problem.
Yeah, it was a TeamViewer scam, and they cleaned out her bank account. And then there was the one time she got crypto locked.
Oh,
one of those crypto viruses. And you know, I work with people that are security professionals, and I went and talked to them because they asked me if there was anything that could be done. I went and talked to them, and they said no, you cannot this, and if you pay them, they're probably not going to give you the key to unlock it anyway. And then, you know, I went back and told them this, you know, security professionals, there's no way to get your information back, it's gone.
They didn't listen.
But they didn't listen, and they went and bought software that designed to decrypt the stuff. They didn't pay the people, thankfully, but they went and bought software to decrypt the stuff, and guess what?
Deleted all the data.
It didn't work.
Now, with those things, they normally tell you if you do fall for a crypto, one of those, I forget what they call them now, but basically all your data, ransomware. If you do fall for ransomware, still maintain the disk that the data is on. Later on, if the keys are revealed, or if they manage to break the encryption, the government posts the decryption keys and everything online, and you can pull them down and decrypt your data later. But it's going to be like a much later thing. Don't get rid of the disk or the drive.
See, that's what happened to Honky's Bunsen Labs computer. Is he got ransomware on it and didn't want to tell us, so he just wiped the whole thing.
Is all the ransomware that shows up on Linux?
Yeah. But I do know a person that fell for a romance scheme like this. Not really a friend, just a guy I met. And
it was you.
No, what he did, so he was unemployed at the time. So he found this woman on Yahoo Chat, quote-unquote woman, from some Eastern European country that sent him all these pictures and sweet-talked him and said she was flying here and stuff. He had this huge DVD collection and CD and albums and all this stuff. This was a long time ago, but he sold it all to Sound Warehouse. You guys remember Sound Warehouse? And or CD Warehouse, because they bought used stuff.
Basically, and, Empire Records.
Yeah, and sold it all, took that money, didn't have a job, took that money, bought a Persian cat, but she said she liked Persian cats, so when she came over, she would have this cat to play with. The rest of it, he sent to her, all of it. And I think it was in the tens of thousands of dollars. He had saved, I mean, he had such a huge, like a library, an awesome library of movies and old vinyl and stuff like that. And they actually had, he couldn't take it to them. They had to come and pick it up from his house, bring trucks, up his library. So, yeah, all gone.
That's pathetic.
And he was a very lonely guy, you know.
Yeah.
I felt bad for him.
Excuse me, folks.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know about this movie, but Joe, how are you doing?
Oh, sorry.
I'm finding this recap to be very disturbing and depressing.
Agreed.
Now, are we going to have another half hour of this, or
no? We can move on. But
we say that, and then we just keep talking.
What about actually, that other movie?
We have some other stuff to talk about. We haven't talked about projects yet.
Oh yeah, there you go.
I did.
Yeah, Joe mentioned his.
We still have to pick the next movie. Then we'll do the project.
Oh yeah. I'm still recovering from COVID, so.
Let me pick the next movie real quick.
Yes, please.
And good call, Netminer. We don't want to be depressing everybody talking about all this terrible stuff about how that movie and blah, blah, blah. But do you guys thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up for me. Yeah.
I don't get a vote.
Yeah, he didn't see it.
I'm going to go thumbs down on this. I just couldn't.
Was it because of the authenticity or just the subject matter?
It was
so soul crushing.
Question, and I just didn't really care about any of the characters. I just was like, let's get this over with.
I can see that for sure.
Too real.
I don't know. There was a great deal of anticipation when he pulled up to the house, though.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
that was probably the best part of the entire movie, was just the anticipation of pulling up to the house.
Thumbs down because
the tramp stamp pictures in the Matrix.
I saw that.
Oh, you posted the tramp stamp?
Yeah.
Thumbs up because of the tramp stamp.
All right, hang on. See, we're getting ready to get to the movie list so I can rate it. So, thumbs up, thumbs down. What about you, Hunky?
I gotta go with thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Yeah.
Morrissey?
Morrissey's got an even thumb.
Okay, so that's a half star. So 2.5 stars. Mark it down.
Is that a tramp stamp of wings? Because those American flags, I can't see from here.
I can't tell.
Is his ass flying, or what is that? Or is it patriotic?
Hang on.
I'm not sure. It looks maybe wings. I don't know.
You know, guys, because of my medications, I can't drink. This movie makes me regret that deeply.
You regret that now?
So
just talking about believe it makes me want to have a drink.
Believe me. I mean, even thinking of the beautiful L. Hardly makes a dent in this depressive mood.
So I've got the next movie here. Transcendence from 2014. Put it in the show notes. Oh, Honky's doing it. I'll put the IMDb link in there. It says, a scientist's drive for artificial intelligence takes on dangerous implications when his own consciousness is uploaded into one such program. It has a rating of 6.2 out of 10.
Johnny Depp,
Rebecca Hall, and Morgan Freeman.
14. Evidently, it's got to be okay, because we'll have it.
So I'll put it up in the Matrix chat.
Yeah, this sounds like Shakespeare in Love compared to the last movie.
Yeah, let's bring up some happier stuff. So, Honky. Project?
I've been mostly just working on... I reinstalled RPG Maker and spent most of Tuesday trying to get the background images that I've been working on into actual backgrounds in the game. And I've found out that I can do it. I gotta size things up right, and then I gotta cut them up right. And so I got all of that done the other day, and then I found out that the laptop that I normally use that's kind of... The laptop that I have one here that was kind of like the staple, just kind of like almost like a desktop. And then I had one that I kind of carried around the house a little bit more. The one that I carried around the house a little bit more that I did all that work on would not run the play test of the game for whatever reason. So I had to install it on the other laptop, and it actually, I can do play tests on it. And I've, so now I can. In other words, I'm getting closer, but it was a frustrating moment that the machine I wanted to work on the game on, I can't for whatever reason. So I tried working, tried to figure out why. But
you still genning your own images for it?
Yeah. And I'm wondering whether I might adjust some of them, because some of the background images I have, they're almost like paintings. So I have other ones. So I'm wondering whether I can use image to image to try to get similar images from the ones that I've already generated. But I gotta get the sizing down right, and then I gotta cut them up right, so then I can just put them on there, and then I can just put the characters on there. But I'm getting closer, and I've actually got the game reinstalled RPG Maker, and was actually in RPG Maker. Well, beforehand, I was just been playing with the images and stuff. That's mostly what I've been doing. I gotta figure out this Red Circle thing, because Red Circle, I'm very hesitant right now, because Red Circle wants to import the podcast. So my options right now are import podcast or create a new podcast. I go to import podcast, and it searches up the our podcast, and it shows up, and then what is it? Verify that I have the rights to it, and then it asks whether are you transferring your podcast to Red Circle's hosting, or do you want to enable Red Circle's ads? Are you transferring your podcast to Red Circle's hosting, or do you want to enable Red Circle's ads on your current platform? I can either click on plan to migrate my podcast to Red Circle, and then the other thing, I want Red Circle's ads is beta, and it says I can't do that. So I'm worried about what happens if I I plan to migrate my podcast to Red Circle. What it's going to do.
Do you know, Eric, you said you used this before?
Yeah, but it was hosting our files. So it was our main distribution point. So if you're trying to use it just as a way to host of the feed itself without hosting the files, yeah, I don't know if that
works. We just wanted to host files, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, so but you're saying, oh, I see what you're saying. Either you feel like if you created a new one, it's going to be a problem because it's going to be a disconnect between the old one and the new one.
Well, if I'm migrating it, I don't know what it wants to migrate or what it wants to do when I migrate. That's the problem.
Well, I don't think you're committing to anything. I mean, I would just choose that option and see what happens as you move forward. That's probably how I would handle it, is if, unless it looks like you're doing something that's like a final committing, like, oh, I'm doing this and there's no backing out. Like, it may be that it, yeah, I never set it up. And that's the truth, is I took it over and was running it after someone had already set it up. So I don't know about that process.
Sounds like something fun to document.
Well, I've given you all my documentation so far. I have created an account. I've had it look up our podcast. I've agreed that it's that I am the owner of the podcast, and then I'm given these two options. And I'm basically just given one option, because it says your current podcast host doesn't connect to Red Circle or Vast. Consider switching to Red Circle's hosting. Or my one other option, which is I plan to migrate my podcast to Red Circle. Again, I just need something with that will host the data files and that will give a URL to the data files.
Right.
To plug into Blueberry Press, which is the thing that we've been using with PowerPress. I mean, with PowerPress, which is PowerPress, Blueberry Press. Either way, so it's the plugin with WordPress that we've been using that generates the RSS feed and.
WordPress, goodness me.
What's wrong with WordPress?
Yeah.
I use WordPress.
You hear about the all the scandal going on with WordPress lately?
WP Engine and WordPress.
I see both sides of it, frankly. I think Matt Mullenweg can be a bit of a heavy hand, but he does have a point.
I think it'll work itself out.
It will. I think it's going to be fine. There are too many people using the platform, and I don't think his decision really undermines anything fundamentally, frankly. I think you've got a couple groups of people who are taking liberties that, you know, he could have handled it better, probably.
Earlier.
Yeah. And in a much less public way, but, you know, that's not who he is. So.
Can we share any details about this? What it is that we're talking about?
Oh, sorry. So there's wp.wordpress.com, which is where the commercial side of WordPress is. And then there's wordpress.org, which is the project, you know, the open source project where you can get all the files. And then there's a plugin repository that's also like a free resource. WP Engine is a competing platform for hosting WordPress. They've taken liberties with using the WP logo and kind of making it a little opaque as to who actually owns and runs WordPress in some cases. So, so Matt Mullenweg's point is, like, you know, WordPress is our trademark. You can't make it seem like you are WordPress, which is kind of what they do in some ways. And so he basically said, okay, if you're going to use our trademark, then you're going to pay to use it. If you want people to believe you're WordPress, then, cause they don't, his other big point was, WP Engine makes millions of dollars off of WordPress by hosting it and charging people for it. They give about 40 hours a week of contributions back to the project. And it might have been like a week or a month. I can't remember what the time period was. But so they're upstreaming very little of the work they've done to make WordPress a better system. Like, they do a lot around performance and security. And so they've kept all that secret sauce to themselves, basically. And so Matt Mullenweg's point was, we put in like thousands of hours a week or a month or whatever. You know, we're paying developers to build this product that you're then taking. It comes down to open source licensing. You know how that we've had this pissing contest several times with, you know, what was the database that Amazon pissed off, and
MariaDB.
Yeah. So that it's that same kind of situation where it's kind of like WordPress feels like WP Engine is a competitor. They are taking liberties with not only the code but with the intellectual property, and they're kind of pissed off about it. But it's this, you know, the way they licensed it, you know, kind of makes it so that maybe that's not legally a problem. And so, that's really it. It's basically comes down to, and I guess there's, you know, if you think of it in a community sense, like if you want to play that stupid game, like I use WordPress and I don't think I'm part of the community. I've been using it for 15 years and it's not like I give a shit about anyone else who's using it personally. And that doesn't mean to say like, I don't, like, I'm glad it's there and I'm glad people are able to use it. And I'm glad so much of the internet is powered by, and it's, you know, it's come a long way from where it started and it's a much more robust platform, blah, 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 whatever. But it falls prey to that popularity because other people, you know, do things with that permissive license.
And yeah, I mean, kind of the same old song with all popular open source software.
Yeah.
Red Hat and Alma and Rocky and all of them.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually a better analogy than the database one. It's definitely much more like that Red Hat situation where it's like, you know, you can't basically take our product and make it your product. So the outcome of it was, you know, Mullenweg's asking for restitution, and then also there are certain plugins that WP Engine owned that were hosted on the plugins website, which is where if you're running WordPress and you have the update, it has built-in updates, like a repository update in it. That's where it's drawing those updates from. And it's a really popular plugin called ACF something. It's custom fields. So anyway, it's pretty popular and they pulled it from the plugin repository. So if you have it installed, you're not going to get updates anymore, which is a bad thing because, you know, there's constantly security problems found in all these plugins and stuff. So it's kind of bleeding over into the users themselves, you know, who now have to deal with this nonsense, and it's leaving a bad taste in some people's mouths. And, you know, so the community part of it where some people are like, you know, well, I don't want to use WordPress anymore because of an action like this. And it's like, fine, there's lots of alternatives. See you later.
Hell, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's a lot of bluster. It's a lot of people that want to make noise and be heard.
Slow news cycle.
Yeah.
I started using it mainly when they introduced the Federation plugin because I like how I can, you know, your blog is now federated, and also the comments are federated. People can comment from Mastodon or wherever. Limmy, part of the Fediverse with that plugin now. So that's why I started using it. I switched over.
Yeah. Like it. Well, I mean, plugins, the extensibility, the multi-site capability, like there's so many things that make it an excellent sort of foundation. And then, you know, there are plenty of people that use it where they just take a stock theme and, you know, just sort of use what's built in. But a lot of, I would say, the more sort of advanced sites are using a lot of plugins to extend the functionality well beyond what the core system is. And in some cases, it can be fine. Like I've been building WordPress websites for 15, maybe 16 years. And I mean, for money. And I've had very, very few problems with it. I mean, I've been able to upgrade sites for like many generations of the software. They've done wonders with, you know, making sure there's compatibility. And you do have to keep it up to date. That's for sure. I mean, if you don't, you know, it's one of the biggest ways to make money, honestly, as a WordPress consultant, is to find an abandoned, you know, a company that has an abandoned WordPress site that doesn't work right because it hasn't been updated properly in too long. And all of a sudden stuff just doesn't work anymore.
And just use the snap.
Yeah.
Using a Docker container for WordPress. Works really well.
Yeah. And they've actually enabled, within the last year or two, they have automatic updates that are pretty reliable. So mm-hmm. If it's not a mission critical site, you can turn all that on and just let it do its thing. I've used a third party management system for a long time it's a plugin itself, and it lets you sort of reach in and see which sites need updates. And then it's called ManageWP. Basically, it's just an orchestration management tool.
They're going to get sued next.
No, because they've really, they don't do any hosting. They just, they, you can do, they do offer services like backups and SEO and stuff like that, but the hosting itself is done elsewhere. So, but I don't think they're going to, I mean, the whole ecosystem is these hosts that offer, I mean, everybody offers WordPress. That's a web hosting company. So I don't think there's any animosity there because they all, I mean, none of them claim that it's their software or, you know, I don't know. A lot of them will have small bits of functionality that are sort of this customized, you know, to fit into their, like their management panels and stuff, but nothing like WP Engine. Actually, I'm not a fan of that site, that system. I've had some customers that pay for it and it's very expensive. And I don't think that you get what you pay for personally. And I also think their stack and their tools are very limiting. Like they tell you what plugins you can run and what you can't. And it's a weird service. I've never really dealt with another service like that, a host like that. So, anyway.
Do we get into the Stallman stuff or no?
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about that. Tell us about your BFF.
I mean, do you want to? Or yay or nay?
Well, I mean, how deeply are we going into it? I'm not even sure what it is. I didn't read either article, either the positive or the negative article. So how much do you want to get into it?
Well, we could just, I mean, it's the same old, same old. It's just people digging up old dirt. Captain RC posted it in the Matrix. That's the only reason I was going to mention it. There's a website called the Stallman Report, and they have, I don't know what you would call it, like, you know, it talks about his opinions regarding miners and stuff. Everybody is probably familiar with anybody that's got Stallman. Pretty controversial. But that's what they are, his opinion. Not like he's ever been convicted of being a pedophile or anything. I don't agree with him, but I can just say I don't agree with you.
Did you get the feel that it was output from an LLM?
What?
The Stallman Report?
Oh, I didn't really. I think I put in the Matrix that I think there's people out there with too much time in their hands.
Yeah, what I got from it? This is a normie that just discovered Richard Stallman and is now trying to make waves.
Could be. I don't know. They don't really say who they are. It just says contact us at editors@stallman-report.org. They list a bunch of references. So they're not brave enough. They're wild enough to put them on blast, but not brave enough to leave their actual names or identities. After they just totally lambaste them.
Well, okay. Yeah, I'll give you that much. They did a little something by doing a report, if you want to call it that. But truth be told, TLDR, nothing new here.
Yeah, that's my opinion. Nothing new that people didn't know. Well, there was one thing that I thought was weird. And I brought it up in Matrix. It happened in the 80s where he supposedly was talking to a woman, I don't know if it was a student or a coworker or whatever, but he was just telling her, you know, how all the terrible luck he had with women, and she took it as he was saying that life isn't worth living if you don't go out with me or something like that. Like he was coercing her to date him or he would kill himself.
Oh, we got to use the new supposedly term. We got to use the new kids' term. Oh, it's not new, but the new kids like to say gaslighting about everything. They're gaslighting.
Oh. Yeah. So whether that's true or not, I was going to say the new term,
unalive.
Oh, unalive? Yeah, yeah. He's going to delete himself.
I mean, this happened in the 80s, you know? And I mean, yeah, it would. If that was true, it's kind of shitty to tell a woman that you're going to kill yourself or unalive yourself if they don't date you or whatever.
Goodbye, monetization.
But, I mean, okay, you know, we know he's a weirdo. It's just how he is. That doesn't really negate the contributions he's made to free software. I mean, so there's that. Well, I'll go ahead and put it in the show notes.
And this is why you don't let open source developers talk to normies. Every time you let them out of their cage and they say something where the normies can hear it, you get a damn report and people start freaking out. All right. We all understand open source people can be weird and they just do some, you know, they do things that aren't exactly agreeable at times, but we don't go making a big deal about it. We just kind of, you know, how many times has Linus said something crazy to someone else, Linus Torvalds? So yeah, exactly. Or remember that 14-year-old kid he told that he surprised that he was still alive or something crazy. He surprised the kid found his mother's teeth or something stupid on the kernel message board. He didn't know the kid was 14, but regardless, the wild crap that he's put in there, it's normal if you've been around.
So there's also a rebuttal. I've posted that as well, github.io, and it's like, it's basically a petition signed by who these people are, I guess, contributors. But
petition to do what?
It just says it's an open letter in support of Richard Stallman. And
it's going to be, you know what they should do? They should sign it 100,000 times, and every single signature should be your mom.
Well, it says 6,876 individuals have signed it. It says removing RMS will hurt FSF's image and will deal a significant blow to the momentum of the free software movement. To the ambush mob who is ganging up on Richard Stallman over reasonable arguments and debate and various opinions and beliefs voiced over decades as a public figure, you have no part in choosing the leadership of any communities, especially not via another mob attack which does not remotely resemble a fairly conducted debate as exemplified by better people such as Richard Stallman. Signed it. He actually signed it as a GitHub pack. Anyway, that's pretty much it. I mean, everybody I'm sure who's listening to this knows Stallman's history and Stallman.org, his opinion blog, and
who's Richard
stuff.
Stallman?
Yeah.
I met him at one of the early Ohio Linux Fests.
Oh, did
you? At the FSS table. Yeah.
Was he eating his feet?
Not when I was talking to him.
Oh, that's good. At least saved it for later. So,
anyway, that was my introduction to It's GNU Linux.
GNU Linux, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? I appreciate his dedication to that, making sure that everyone understands that you got to give attribution to GNU when you discuss Linux. I appreciate that, though it's a terrible name and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I remember buying software.
GNU. Is that a book plug?
From the.
Oh, that's a penguin. Okay, you're covering the head of it. It's kind of hard to see what you were holding up there.
From the Free Software Foundation, I was buying software to run under old-fashioned DOS. And that's the first time that I've ever bought software from a business, alleged business, who was against people actually using the software they were selling. He did not like to see GNU software running under proprietary DOS. And that was before I got into free DOS and stuff. But the deal is, if you're trying to get people into free software, getting them to use it on the most widespread platform that's available during that time is probably a good idea.
I agree.
But Stallman was just too ideologically rigid.
Very much so.
I mean,
Billet.
So
you're saying he's...
The Bunker Hill Monument is more flexible, I think.
You're saying he's not a fan of WSO?
He's not a fan of anything but Stallmanism.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And,
that's always been my take.
Also, guys, You know, if it wasn't for the scintillating content that you guys have been presenting, I might have taken days to take out my trash.
Oh, look at this. We actually helped out.
And Lovecraft, I'm going to assume the Get Well card that you sent me will also cover listening to this particular program.
That sounds
isn't
like a
that bad? I was having a good time.
I wouldn't listen to me.
And this, and the other card, well, as I said, you know, I've been blessed to know you, you and Janelle and Morton C and L, and I was able to open those cards and truly enjoy them during this interregum.
During your convalescence.
I'm glad you enjoyed them. I'm glad you're feeling a little bit better too, man. Good to hear you back to your normal self.
Well, I was feeling a lot better, but the excruciating explanation of that movie it may have set back my health weeks.
Now you're making me feel bad because I picked it.
Oh, it's Scotty's fault.
I was urged by Honky and Joe to pick a movie.
I
thought it was interesting.
It was one of the few movies that actually was relevant to technology, though, as opposed to the other movies that we've watched, which are even close. And I thought it spurred on some interesting
Psycho Goreman was absolutely related to technology.
Yeah, that was great.
It might be a depressive subject matter, but it was at least a relevant subject matter.
Thought it was interesting, too.
And Don yeah. Dragon Wilson wasn't in it.
And Don Dragon Wilson wasn't in it, which made it a huge plus.
Yeah,
that is a
that
minus.
Was, that was part of the criteria. The criteria we gave to Scotty when he was picking one was that Don the Dragon Wilson was not allowed to be in the movie at all.
And it wasn't Gunhead.
Wasn't Universal Soldier.
I tried to pick that one
Soldiers.
Right. I tried to pick Nemesis again.
He tried to pick Nemesis 2. That was his initial thing right off the bat, is he wanted to see Nemesis 2.
Oh, it's on the list.
We know, so is 3 and 4.
Because Universal Soldier is actually a good movie.
Honky used his one veto.
Yeah.
He said no. Put his foot down.
I wanted to watch something good for once. Granted, this wasn't
well,
good,
you
but
failed.
Still. Yeah, I know.
It wasn't bad. I didn't think it was. I thought it was just crazy to see how this lady acted.
All right, let's not go back to the depressing poor netminder over here now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have Transcendence to look forward to for next show, 24.
Transcendence. Stallman continues to be crazy, but I mean, why does anybody care at this point? That's the only thing I can say.
I don't know.
I think what was it, Scotty, who said that it had to have seemed like a normie all of a sudden realizing who Stallman is, and it's like, this guy is crazy. Why doesn't everybody realize he's crazy? Everybody knows he's crazy. We got that. My guess is most of the FSF is just as crazy as him in one form or another.
They're just not as vocal about it.
Most of the free software people are pretty crazy in their own form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that 100%.
But we deal with that because
look at how long it took Debian to include non-pure software drivers that virtually every system requires because of the architecture of modern PCs in their core system.
They went on Stallman's naughty list after that.
But you also have to remember, with Debian, though, it's pretty easy to change off of that core system. I mean, just add the non-stable repo into your your app list and your, you know, then you can get all that stuff pretty easily.
Yeah, but that's beyond the default. And I think point that I can always make is if you make someone make it difficult for someone to get it running because they don't know that, then you've just basically pushed someone away. And, you know, okay, do you live and die by some ideal, or do you make it so that your software works?
Solomon does.
But that's the question, right?
But then don't.
I would rather use a Linux phone than an Android phone. Give it to me now.
I would also say this about Stallman around the subject. There has to be somebody on the fringe of any kind of movement, you know, no matter what it is.
Right.
Whether it's where, you know, he is far, far on that end of the fringe. But what happens is, yeah, everybody points to him and says he's crazy, but he still has ideas that people accept and get and gradually make their way into the mainstream way of thinking as far as open source software goes. Any kind of movement needs those fringe figures where if you look at them as a whole, they're insane, but the few good ideas they have will gradually, you know, mix in with the rest. And if you don't have those fringe figures, then you miss that kind of innovation and stuff like that. And so it's just, yeah, he's different, but I think he's necessary.
Well, just to be politically correct here, we don't say things like crazy or insane. We call them mentally hilarious.
Yeah, I like that mentally too. Hilarious.
But that's the point I would make about Stallman.
And I think, just to add on to that, there's a line at which that cuts off. So there is definitely, you know, if you want to politicize it left and right or whatever, but I think there are people that take that to an extreme that no longer contribute meaningful dialogue. Like they've just gone so far. Like,
sure.
They can't be reasonable. You know what
and
I mean?
And maybe Stallman has already approached that, you know.
Well, I'm not accusing him of that. I'm just saying the point you're making, I agree with. And I'm thinking in terms of politics probably more than software, but I think that's where you kind of, if the attitude is, well, there's room for everybody, I think that's mostly true, but I do think that there are some people that push that too far.
You need somebody like Stallman as your initial catalyst.
Yeah,
correct. And then he kind of he's kind of a figurehead after that, and you know, he might say some crazy stuff in the background, and everyone just goes, "Oh, it's just Stallman." But he was the catalyst who got that whole thing starting in the first place, and that's what you needed, was that catalyst.
Yeah, and then the Free Software Foundation has done a lot of good for open source software in terms of sticking up for people with licensing issues, and I mean, they do as an organization a lot of good, and I agree that. Because he's such a polarizing figure, it's just like they were trying to get, you know, Torvalds out of Linux, or at least out of being the figurehead of Linux, because, you know, he pisses people off. And
he just needed a better chat filter.
You do need a benevolent dictator when it comes to a project as big as Linux.
But you almost need somebody like that in Linux kernel, because most of the time when he's pissed off because things aren't getting things aren't getting done right when he thinks they need to be done right, or people or other companies, like when he's flipping off NVIDIA or whatever that was, it's people who are just too damn stubborn to try and play along with them. Like, look, we're doing all this stuff. Why don't you just play along? Give us the code. Giving us the code doesn't hurt you at all. It can only make you better. Stop fucking fighting with us all the time and just give us the code. There's no reason. There's no reason to keep fighting us. But you need somebody to get pissed off and yell at these people and be like, look, what is the matter with you?
Right. And he's shown good judgment. I mean, over the years, more good judgment than bad. And really, it just comes down to his interpersonal skills that are abrasive. It's not that his performance is bad. The role that he is in, that's far from the truth is that he does a very, very good job. And I don't know how many people can think in terms of that, the breadth and depth of all of the things that are in the kernel and that want to be in the kernel and when they should go in, and like, you know, managing all of that is crazy. Talk about product management or software development management, like that that's a pretty big, pretty big important project. And he's done a very good job of it. It's just whenever he gets pissed off, instead of being PC about it, he's just like, I don't give a shit. Because what are you going to do?
Right. So if you are in... Now, these people who are contributing, are they getting money for contributing?
Who?
Into the kernel developers? Yeah.
Depends if they work for Red Hat or if they do, yeah. or if, just you know, regular open source contributors or what?
If they're just regular Linux like kernel developers and they're in these mailing lists and they don't like the situation and it's not a job, I mean, it'd be like if this podcast got to a point where some of the people here got to be toxic, what would you guys do?
I would defer to you, probably.
I'm not toxic.
You would just leave. You would just be like, look, I've had enough of this. I would leave. This is obviously not the type of environment I want to be in. I'm gonna leave. You wouldn't then find, create a giant thing about it and try to, you know, change everything. It's a podcast. You're doing this because you want to do it. You know, it's the Linux kernel. People are, if you were in there of your own free will contributing to something and you don't like the way that it's handled, you can just, you have the option to just walk away. Now, if you're a paid employee at a job that's a toxic environment, you have that opportunity where you can say, hey, I'm not going to deal with this and go do something else. Or you can try and, you know, file something saying that this guy is creating a toxic environment, but that's more of a job situation than it is like something you're doing of your own, you know, some group or something that you're doing of your own free will.
And Linus addressed that himself as well. He mentioned before that if one of the wonderful things about open source is you don't have to work with him. There are plenty of other people within open source that you can work with. So, you know, In his own little way, he was explaining that, look, plenty of options available to you. Don't stick around for the one you don't like.
Right.
But they're our heroes, and I, for one, will not throw away any heroes. One of the issues that our country has now is we want our heroes during wartime, but when the war is over, we get bored with them. We don't know what to do with them, and we're quick to turn them into criminals. I refuse to do that with the open source heroes. Just because we're no longer at war with Microsoft, well, you know, we kind of are, but still, it's not as bad as it used to be. We're no longer in the big fight against them right now, and everybody hearts Linux. So I'm going to keep the heroes around and show them all the love, even though they're barefooted and crazy.
Yeah, and plus nobody's saying you have to agree with everything they say. We're just saying that the contributions that
get you to, like, no, he's not. Storm is not going out there telling you have to do everything he's doing.
It's his own opinions, you know. But that's the thing. I think people think if they don't agree with everything a certain person says, and they become offended, then that person just needs to be canceled. Forgotten about.
Yeah, the cancel culture is really a pain.
Throw them in the trash.
Now, it's midnight plus here on the East Coast, and I'm still convalescing. Are we actually going to close the show, or is this going to go to 1 o'clock again?
Is there anything else anybody wants to bring up?
Is anybody else working on anything?
I have
else?
One.
Go for it, Mordency.
Okay, I'm working on cloud stuff and all that and making progress with Docker and Podman and want to start orchestrating and linking into Git for our projects. So if anybody has any projects, if any listeners have ideas for projects or want to participate, want to start working on stuff, I think that's the best way for all of us to learn and grow is to collaborate. But the thing I wanted to bring up was the Ohio Linux Fest is coming up in, I think, 4 weeks. It'll be, I think, the second weekend in November. And I was wondering if you guys were interested in me handing out pins and or stickers that say LinuxLugcast.com and maybe a phrase. There's I have one picture logo with the Linux and the penguin, and it has a statement at the bottom. Picture that I have.
We don't have all the answers, but we're not afraid to look. I don't know what I have in there recently. You're talking about the Linux Slugcast logo has been the Atlas Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
Or Tux Atlas.
Yes, probably.
I have the reason.
Absolutely. If you get a chance, promote the show.
Yeah, if you want to throw a different saying in there, because we
get the word out.
But yeah, the Tux Atlas has been the logo.
We may not have all the answers, but we're not afraid to look for them.
We could do that.
Is that not the Tux Atlas where he's holding it and it says underneath?
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I mean, I don't have the we're not afraid to look for it on the website anymore, but the Tux Atlas has been our logo.
I have that image saved from a long time ago.
Yep.
You can say we don't have any answers.
We know nothing. We ramble about movies.
So there's two types of metal pins. The one has the stylus, and they have a dark primary colors, and then three, but like a gold and silver and like peach pink, like a pink metal color, rose, I think they call it. Same thing with the next metal pin with the clip. And then I think they're all medium.
Mediums.
I think sticker, just a bunch of stickers would be fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me see. It's in November when?
Blue, black, ink.
15th and 16th. Okay. Most of them are either or.
So
I think the default is black, but you can pick blue.
Morrissey, you want to shoot me your address? And I'll send you a bunch of stickers.
You have stickers?
Yeah, I can make some real easy. So, I work in a media company.
Make some?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? Free. I want stickers.
Free of charge.
I want stickers.
I want stickers.
Okay, now one step at a time. This is for the show.
I'll just be covered head to toe with Linux stickers.
Yeah, but message me on Matrix your address and I'll send you a box.
Okay. And then the other pins, you've got the regular Bic clicker. And then they usually have, there's one called a javelin where it's more ergonomic and the top is slanted at an angle. I don't have one.
Does it have the grip?
To show you, but those are the ones. It doesn't have an added grip, but it has the shape at the bottom.
With the ridges or no ridges?
I don't think they had ridges. I can probably send some pictures of them, but if we put Linux Lugcast on them, either just the I don't know if they can do black and green like the logo, where Lug is green, or if we put Linux Lugcast the URL and then like one or two lines with words on it. I always love pins, and you can just stop and drop them off at other people's tables.
I love pins myself, especially, well, mostly for journaling, but.
So I'll post some designs based on that penguin in the Matrix. You guys can, whatever you guys like, I'll get some stickers made.
All right. I think stickers are great. Everyone loves stickers. Everyone loves covering their laptops with stickers.
Yeah.
I've been covering the bare wood of my desk and office over here with the stickers. I got some back up there. I got some around here. Yeah,
we gotta get a sticker that says RIP that's my, Cricket.
Yeah,
that's my last order of stickers. I brought back hundreds of stickers from Thailand. I ordered them while I was over there from Shopee or Lazada. It's like the equivalent of Wish and Temu here.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's right next to China, it's even cheaper.
Nice.
Well, I'm kind of with Netminer.
Fade,
yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm done. Yeah, stick a fork in me.
Was there anything else? I don't know. I almost want to try to get one last thing of like legitimate Linux content in before we run away.
Yeah, we can do that real quick.
Is there anything on Lemmy? What do you got?
All right, for all you Linux users out there, or new to Linux users out there, there's three files I want to point out to you really quickly. Whenever you're booting up your Linux box for the first time, you're going to get your bash profiles, which is your login interactive config that controls what happens when you first log into your system and you open up a terminal. Then you will have your bash rc, which is a non-login interactive config, which happens for every other terminal that you launch or shell session that you launch after you log in. So that controls all of the different things that are ran in the non-login shells. And afterward, the last file will be your bash aliases, which that one can be renamed as anything. You can just call it like Scotty aliases or whatever, and source that within your bash aliases to add additional functionality to your shell. Sorry about that. I tried to clear my throat off to the side. But the reason I'm mentioning all three of these, you can do cool stuff with them based on, you know, whatever system you're running. You can add in certain things to occur whenever you log into a system. So you can have certain things prepared for you by placing them into your bash profile, which is the very first file that is checked by your, well, not the very first, but one of the first config files that is checked by your system when you log in using the shell.
Can you add that to the show notes, please? Oh, sure. You did. Okay.
Was it already in there?
Well, I saw you something.
There's more.
Yeah, so the first one the system uses is Etsy profile.
Is it oh yeah, yeah.
That gets it by the all users?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then so you said you had bash profile. Aliases also?
Yeah,
bash. Yeah, so bash profile, then bash login, and then profile.
There you go.
Dot.
I think in that order, as a matter of fact. Because it has a specific order. Yeah, it has a specific order that they go in. And then from there, the very last one would be your the one that I mentioned, the bash aliases. That one can be renamed to anything to hold some of your special commands and other things you'd like to, additional functionality you'd like to add to your session.
Bash aliases, you alias commands, so you can do C for cat, you can do, you know, different things. Bash functions is also another one where you can make functions, so you can have one I used to use all the time was mkcd, and it make a directory and cd into it. So
that's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And you use and so if it fails to make it, it doesn't try to move into it.
Okay.
I think we should start a list of on our Git server that we're putting up on Lugcast Lab. We should have a dot files, configuration files, some mm-hmm. common things. You know, maybe next week we can go over Scotty's .vimrc. I think it's sweet. That's the cleanest vimrc I've seen in a long time.
And I want your vim examples too.
Which one?
Tell me. Well, he wanted to show off his vim skills in Morton, so yeah.
Well, I love me some vim there now.
Handwritten, man. Look at that.
Gentlemen, is anyone here detecting a rabbit hole?
Oh, yeah.
I'll say one more thing. This is just some kind of breaking news recently.
I'm seeing those little pellets everywhere.
I put the links in the show notes. Android may soon have a native Linux terminal app. It's kind of cool. It says that Google is working on official support for Debian Linux on Android through their new terminal, native. That'll be in Android 16, I believe. It says a streamlined process to download, set up, and use Debian on Android is on the way.
Honky, take us away quickly before we lose Netminer.
Fast. Actually, when is our next recording date? I got to change that. November 2nd? No. First. Or first.
First or second.
It's gotta be the first. Second and Saturday. All right. So our next recording date is November 1st, 2024. 2024 is quickly coming to an end, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. We'll probably do another New Year's recording. When is New Year's? What day of the week is New Year's this year? A Wednesday or something?
I'm going to go on Amazon and order some more 2024.
It's a Tuesday. It's New Year's Eve. Yep.
We start the music.
You got it.
All right. Our next recording date will be November 1st, 2024. Our music is Downright provided by Cloud2 and Brome. I'd like to thank Minix for the Mumble server, Matrix server, Bitsy. Most of the servers that we run, Minix is hosting them. All right. I'm your host this evening, Honky Magoo. With us tonight is Eric.
Have a good couple weeks.
Joe.
Good night.
Lovecraft.
Good night, everybody.
Lugbot. Why did I do that again?
You can do it.
Good night.
Minix.
Good night, everybody.
Morton C.
Good night, everyone. I hope to see you at the Ohio Linux Fest.
Netminer.
Good night, friends.
And Scotty.
Good night, everybody.
All right. Good night, everybody. Hopefully I can find some way to host this audio.
And that opens up a settings window, and there's three tabs in it, and I just added, you know, where you can do ports. I added three TCP for 9091, and then one for UDP. I'll try and find the image and see if I can send it to you in
the Signal lab?
No. We use Matrix. Yeah. Matrix. I'll send it to you on Matrix.
Okay, because I have to remember that you're using Cockpit with this, because I'm trying to use my own, like how I interact with it now, trying to match that with what Cockpit would show. And this is all. It sounds like this is done in a container file, and you're spinning up from the container file, so this should be auto configured. Right, you're just deploying from that file.
Yeah, so you don't redeploy from it. You can start and stop it, and you can destroy it. So there's no, as far as I know, there's no YAML file where you just go, I'm going to make these changes, and it's going to be a second version of this. You know, a second blog, a second Git GUI, you know. You just have to build another one from the image. See, I want to know how to do all that other stuff, and it doesn't look like Cockpit lets you do that unless I'm just not seeing the instructions places.
Loud and clear, Minix.
Let's see, who's Monkey's recording?
So Cockpit.
Yeah, if it's recording, I'm going to stop talking about this.
Oh.
Well, it looks like Honky's been recording.
What?
I'm recording too now.
The only thing you guys have been talking about since I've been here is about Cockpit. Or about...
Okay.
There's been nothing that would cause any concern, at least not that I heard. I apparently missed the good stuff.
Okay. Yes. I still need to figure out how to get that device, the Ansel server, cloud appliance to recognize all the cores on the Xeon chip.
Test, 1, 2, 3.
Well, you can hear it.
Yeah, I had to sync for the recording.
I use a potato chip clip, and I open it up and just let it snap in front of the mic, so it creates that, it's like a clapper, basically. Gives you that spike where you can sync off of.
That's a good idea.
In a recording or a setting like this, though, you might want to give a warning before you let that clip go, though.
Yeah. Okay. Looks like we're good to go.
Scotty, can you see the chat in Mumble?
Yeah, I'm clicking on that now.
So that's what I have, and it's maxed out. It's I have the red one, and every setting on it is maxed out. So it was over $3,000. I exchanged something of comparable value to somebody 7 years ago, 7.5 years ago, and got it when it was a Kickstarter, I think.
Quick question. How are they cooling this thing?
It's the case. It's like a Intel Nook, but it's passively a Xeon cooled server. Yeah.
And it's the